Well, hello, everybody. This is Greg Anderson, and I'm welcoming you to episode 4 of the Memoirs of a Movie Stand-In podcast. I am out on location today. It's a windy fall day here in Utah. It's actually October 21st, 2008, which means that almost exactly 12 years ago, the Promised Land crew and I were hard at work, probably working on the Thanksgiving episode of Touched by an Angel for that year. It was a kind of a two-part episode, a crossover with Touched by an Angel. So episode 1 aired as a Touched by an Angel episode. Episode 2 was a... The conclusion of that storyline was a Promised Land episode and featured Delta Burke as the guest star for each of those shows. And we did our part of that episode. We did a lot of work right here where I'm standing right now. I'm in Springville, Utah, better known to the fans of Promised Land and Touched by an Angel as Chicory Creek. In fact, I am right now standing on the front porch of a house at the corner of 200 East and 200 South. Those are the street names here in Springville. They correspond. It's like a grid, you know, so I'm basically two blocks east of the center of town and also two blocks to the south of the center of town. And I'm standing on the porch of this house, which you probably know as Erasmus's house on the show. I'll take a couple snapshots of this house as it stands today and let you see how it looks. Actually, it looks quite a bit similar to how it did back then, except that it looks like it's been abandoned for some time. Doesn't look like there's any furniture inside. The grass looks okay, but the ivy that's growing around the house is, it's very... looks like it hasn't been well manicured for a while. Lots of leaves around here. I'm just coming around the south side of the house, and as I look in the windows, I see there's no furniture or anything in there. When we actually did the episodes here of Promised Land, the house was occupied at that time. Somebody's private home, and when we would come to work on episodes, they would have to, you know, vacate the house for a day or two, or however long we happened to be there. We actually did not use the interior of the house. I think that sometimes maybe they would have, maybe a place where a director or maybe a cast member could just go inside and take a little bit of a rest. But we had a whole set at our sort of our main offices that was used for the interior of this house. The exterior was actually... Well, the house, the real house, is not quite big enough inside to hold everything that we built into our interior set that we built. But that's kind of interesting. I'm just walking through the back of the house. Now, when we were working on the Promised Land series, there were a couple of vacant lots on either side of the house. The house is on a corner, and it's actually, as you stand in the middle of the intersection, which, you know, of course I don't recommend that for safety concerns, but the house we used for Erasmus's house was on the southwest corner of that intersection. Well, it still is. I mean, here I am. And just to the south of the house, there was a rather large vacant lot, and there's sort of a dip next to it where we usually park the Airstream trailer and made it look like that's where the Greens had parked the trailer. And then to the west of the house itself, there was also kind of a vacant lot. Just recently, some houses have been built in those vacant lots. To the south, there's two brand new houses. They're actually still under construction. They look rather complete, but not occupied yet. And also, there's that house to the west. So the corner is a little bit more crowded than it was back then in the late 1990s. Right now, I'm standing in the driveway of the Erasmus house. And I'll again, take some pictures here and post them on the website. It's a little bit sad to see the house looking so vacant. But on the other hand, it's kind of encouraging to see that it's still here. I'm sure that with these newer houses built right next to it, you know, it might be valuable piece of property to just build a new house there. But the Erasmus House is still standing, a bit neglected, so you fans of Promised Land Touched by an Angel, you might be disappointed to see that nobody seems to care about that house anymore. All right, I'm just taking a little bit of walk to the south here on the sidewalk in front of the Erasmus House. I'm just going to keep calling it that. And just across the street from me here is the Springville Community Presbyterian Church. And if you were watching Touched by an Angel in Promised Land, you may have noticed they established the fact that there was a church just across the street from Erasmus's house. And in fact, that was all real. I think they changed the name on the sign in front of the church on the show. So, of course, it doesn't say Springville Community Presbyterian Church in the show. But other than that, the church itself looks pretty good. It's actually, there's a little plaque in front. This is registered as a historical site for the state of Utah. So it's very well kept up. And this nice church, where they have worship services every Sunday. In fact, that's what the sign says right out front. Everyone welcome, 9:15 a.m. church, school, 10:30 worship, and 11:30 fellowship. Now, one thing that was just added for the sake of the show, especially the pilot episode, they added the grave markers and built a little cemetery in front of the church. That was just added for the show. There's really not any grave markers there. It's just a nice little lawn in front of that Springville Community Presbyterian Church. Now, we actually used the exterior of the church in the pilot episode, and we used the interior, the real interior of the real church, for the Thanksgiving episode with Delta Burke. And had her, you know, and Gerald McCraney had a rather significant scene inside that chapel there, the real thing. So if you ever get to Springville on a Sunday, you want to go to church inside the place where Erasmus went to church and Julia went to church. Well, there you go. Springville is a nice, quiet town for the most part. A lot of older homes here, a lot of big, beautiful trees in town. And there's a nice art museum just a few blocks south of where I'm standing. So Springville is well known in Utah for its support of the arts. And the art museum has a lot of fine paintings and sculptures and what have you there. So this town was chosen for the Promised Land pilot episode because of the look of the town. I later, after, you know, we got into Promised Land and started doing a lot of work here in front of this house, I remember speaking with one of the location guys from the Touched by an Angel crew, who basically admitted that, you know, when they were looking for a location to shoot the pilot episode for Promised Land, they didn't really count on the idea that we'd be coming back here often to shoot more episodes in the Chicory Creek location that we'd established. You see, Springville is a good hour's drive away from downtown Salt Lake City, which is where, you know, sort of the main offices were for the Touched by an Angel and Promised Land production staff. So, you know, we probably would have preferred, just from the standpoint of having to travel around a lot, to maybe have a Chicory Creek that was a little bit closer to downtown Salt Lake City. But like I said, they were just choosing a place that would work well for the pilot episode. They didn't think we'd have so many episodes where we'd be going back. But, you know, it worked out okay. It was a long drive for a lot of us, but a somewhat relaxing drive because we were sort of going the opposite direction of most of the commuter traffic. So it wasn't that bad to get down to Springville to do our Chicory Creek stuff from time to time. One more note, as long as I'm standing here in this location, on the opposite corner, the northeast corner of this particular intersection, there's a building, and it's got a sign in front that says Wheeler Mortuary. And in the pilot episode of Promised Land, that building was established as the home of the doctor that Russell Green was expecting to work for before he came to town and realized the doctor had passed away. So there's that home right over there. There were some shots in the pilot episode where you can see the family walking along the sidewalks just, you know, within a block of where I'm standing. And by the way, you know, the pilot episode was shot kind of in two pieces. There was the original version, and then months later, about two-thirds of the original version had to be replaced because of script and cast changes. So if you watch closely in the pilot episode of Promised Land, you can see in some places where the trees are very full and lush and green, and in other places where the trees are not. And so that's an easy way to figure out which scenes were shot in the early spring and which scenes were then shot in the middle of July to complete the work on the pilot episode. So just a little something you might want to look out for. And one other note, as long as I'm here on location talking about the pilot episode of Promised Land, a couple bits of trivia here. At one point, the Promised Land series was going to be called Home of the Brave. And, you know, these things happen. People, you know, come up with ideas and then they change their mind. And by the time it gets released, a few things have been altered. So it was not called Home of the Brave in the end. But there was a time when, you know, that was going to be the name of the show. There is a little reference to that that's still visible in the pilot episode. After we've had this whole, I want to say, adventure of the first episode, where Russell decides he's going to take his family on this long-term road trip around the country and get to know America and be patriotic and help people along the way, and this is what the series is going to be about. Well, there's a shot then at the end when they're on their way and they drive off, and it's kind of a helicopter shot where you see the back window of their Airstream trailer, which has sort of a homemade sign in the back window that says, Home of the Free and the Really Brave. So, you know, you get the idea that anyone who decides this is what they're going to do and this is how they're going to live their lives with their family for a while, that's really brave. And so the Airstream trailer becomes not only in itself a home of the brave, but, you know, of course, the United States, also known as the home of the brave. And so, anyway, there's that sign in the back window of the Airstream trailer as the trailer drives away. And you hear a little bit of a voiceover of the family members talking to each other as they're driving away. Well, I have that sign. I have it. I don't know if anyone's been looking for it over at CBS, but what happened was when the series Promised Land was almost done, I was back at the converted warehouse that we were using as a studio, as a soundstage, and, you know, there were just some old props and things lying around in the corner, and normally I wouldn't have, you know, just grabbed something and taken it home with me. I really, you know, that's I'm clear on ethics, and I know that it's just not right to just decide, oh, I'm going to make my own souvenir here. But in this case, there was something about seeing that sign rolled up, sitting in the corner, neglected, getting dusty, and I just thought, you know, someone's probably just going to throw this away because it just looks like some homemade sign, and really the crew of Promised Land, probably nobody on the crew had anything to do with that sign. Because, you know, it was the Touched by an Angel crew that did that original pilot version. So I just thought, this sign is probably not going to survive if I don't take it home. So I say this on my podcast, you know, and granted, if someone from CBS or Martha Williamson or someone just, you know, if they send me a note and said, you know, I demand that sign from you, well, first of all, I'd have to have you prove that you really were, you know, the rightful, you know, had a rightful claim to that sign. You weren't just somebody pretending. But if there really was a rightful claim to that sign, I would hand it over and let you have it. I must admit that when I got the sign, I ended up slipping it into my own garage at home, and I didn't take awfully good care of it, but at least I didn't throw it away. And I'll go ahead and post a picture of that sign on the show notes for this podcast so that you'll know that, in fact, you know, I really do have it. And you go back and check your, you know, Touched by an Angel DVDs and confirm that, yeah, he really does have that sign that he said he had. Okay, well, one other bit of trivia for Promised Land, and this one, very few people know this. I was working on the show, on the series, for a long time, I'd say at least a year, and I heard one of the cast members just randomly express something about Cheryl Ladd, and I just kind of perked up and said, what's the deal with Cheryl Ladd? And here's what I was told. That at one time, before the pilot was made, there was talk of casting Cheryl Ladd as for the part of Claire Green, Russell Green's wife, in the series. And at this point, when they told me this, I was incredulous because I had watched Wendy Phillips play the character for so long, and she just embodied everything I ever thought about Claire Green, the character. So when they said, oh yeah, Cheryl Ladd almost played this part, I was like, oh no, no. She's all wrong for the part. Oh, it would never have worked. Oh no, Wendy is so right for the part. Cheryl Ladd. So I suppose that's unfair for me to say that about Cheryl Ladd. It's no slight on Cheryl Ladd. It's more of, just my admiration for how well Wendy Phillips just, like I said, embodied the part of Claire Green. So just a little bit of trivia, and I don't even think that's listed on like the Internet Movie Database page about Promised Land, but I was told, at least, that at one point Cheryl Ladd was going to be the leading lady in the show. Okay, as long as I'm still here at the house, I'm just going to take a walk around. I know it's very windy, so I apologize for the wind noise here. Let me see. I'm now on the north porch of the house, and things aren't looking very good here. Let's see. Oh yeah, I see. Okay, there's nobody in there. A couple of broken windows. That's kind of sad. Well, it looks like maybe somebody was doing some remodeling in there. So who knows? Maybe that's why it's abandoned. Maybe. Okay, I'm looking like a prowler or something, peering into the windows of this house. But okay, I'm going to. I'm just going to walk around to the south end of the house, and what I'm going to reminisce about here is that on that pilot episode, there was a birthday party scene, and it took place at night, and just in the backyard of the house here, there was a nice, kind of a gazebo sort of thing, and a table, and they had a little birthday party behind the house for, I think, was it Dinah's birthday? I think, I have to watch the episode again. My point being that, when you're working on a series and you have night exterior scenes, you actually have to film them at night, right? Because, the sky has to be dark in the background. And this can be a little bit of a drag if you are on the film crew, because especially in the middle of the summer, as we were working on that pilot episode, you got to wait. In Utah, official sundown is like 9 o'clock at night, and the sky doesn't really get dark until about 10 p.m. So any night scenes, you can't even start filming them until 10 p.m., and you end up spending, several hours at night filming a scene that may only be 2 or 3 minutes long. Well, the birthday party scene was quite a long scene, and they had all the cast members in there at once. And so, because we had children in the cast, or, at least they're, under 18, there are labor laws that, govern how much they can actually work and how many hours they can spend. So it was turning into just, it was going to be impossible to have the kids on set working all night right here behind the house in Springville. So so what they did, and this, I just loved this, they built a replica of the back of the house and this yard and the back of the garage and this tree and sort of the gazebo that was here. All that stuff was recreated by our brilliant, brilliant construction and set decorating crew, set dressers. They recreated all of that stuff inside a studio about, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes drive from here in Orem, Utah. And that studio actually... Here, I'm going to step in the garage out of the wind. Now I'm really going to get in trouble for the trespassing thing, right? Like I said, they recreated all of the stuff behind this house inside the studio, and the studio we used in Orem was actually the old Osmond studio where they used to tape the Donnie and Marie show in the late 70s. To see the Osmonds, they were from Utah, and since they were going to be doing a weekly variety show, they built their own studio in Utah so they could stay home and produce this show. So it was a rather busy place in the late 70s. It hadn't been used very much throughout the 80s and the 90s, but you know there were occasional shows that would go through there. And we had the replica of the back of Erasmus's house in there. And I had to say, once they got it lit just right on the set there, I went and I stood in the middle of it, and it was kind of eerie just how perfectly they had recreated this backyard right here. So I was very impressed by that. I mean, one of my first experiences working so closely with the set construction and set decoration crew, and I'm like, these guys are the best. Because, you know, I've been to the Real House, I've been to this set. It was amazing. So that way we were able to film the birthday party scene indoors during daylight hours, but make it look like it was outdoors at night. And we got the job done. So, well, those are most of my memoirs about this particular location. If you ever catch up with Touched by an Angel on like the Hallmark Channel or maybe the DVDs, the pilot episode of Promised Land is available on the Touched by an Angel DVDs that are out now. It's actually from the third season of Touched by an Angel. I believe it was the first episode aired that season, Promised Land. So, well, I'll sign off here from the location of the Erasmus House in Springville, Utah, and I'll put up some pictures and a few little odds and ends about this place on the show notes for this podcast. And if you're looking for the official show notes of the Memoirs of a Movie Stand-In podcast, you can find them at utahstandin.blogspot.com. It's an easy thing to find. It's just a blog that I have about this and links to all the episode files so you can listen to the MP3 files of the episodes. But again, utahstandin.blogspot.com. There's no other punctuations or symbols or anything in spaces. utahstandin.blogspot.com. Okay, and again, if you want to send me any questions, comments, any email feedback you've got for me, you can use my email address for this podcast, which is moviestandin@gmail.com. So, moviestandin@gmail.com. That's where you'll be able to send me those notes. Thanks for joining me, and another bit of housekeeping. I've decided I'm going to try to keep this podcast running with a new episode every week. I'm not exactly sure what I'll talk about, but I think I'll still kind of go chronologically as far as my memoirs are concerned. So if you're keeping score on your own calendar, I am right now in mid to late 1996 talking about my work on the Promised Land series and occasionally Touched by an Angel as well. And we'll just move forward from that. So, So join me for the next episode of Memoirs of a Movie Stand-In, the podcast. And thanks for being with me this time.